at the G7 summit, President Trump seeks to dial down trade tensions with China.
Whether or not China's calling up and saying, let's make a deal, it seems like that's probably a little strong. There's no real indication that China, for its part, has really changed its stance over the past couple of days.
And sources alleged that Carlos Ghosn used kickbacks to start a parallel business while he ran Nissan.
Whether it's criminal or not, I think by international business standards, many people would say that shows somewhat questionable judgment, and also the fact that he didn't tell the company maybe creates some sort of conflict of interest.
This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Charlie Turner in New York. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, here are some other stories we're following. Bristol-Myers Squibb moved a step closer to completing its $74 billion purchase of Celgene. Amgen Monday agreed to buy Celgene's Otezla psoriasis treatment for $13.4 billion. The Wall Street Journal's Jared Hopkins says Bristol-Myers and Celgene see the deal as addressing antitrust concerns.
The companies had mentioned several months ago that there were FTC concerns related to anti-inflammatory treatments. And the issue here is the fact that Bristol-Myers was developing or is developing a treatment kind of in this family of treatments, so to speak. It was acquiring from the Celgene potential acquisition or future acquisition here a treatment that's already on the market.
Jarrett adds that for Amgen, Otezla is a strong fit for its portfolio of anti-inflammatory treatments. The House Judiciary Committee has subpoenaed former White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter as part of its investigation into whether President Trump obstructed justice. The subpoena to appear before the committee is Democrats' latest bid to compel a Trump associate to publicly detail allegations that the president sought to interfere in former special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler, Democrat of New York, has said his probe could lead the panel to recommend that the House vote to impeach the president. The subpoena calls for Mr. Porter to appear on September 17th. Student debt is soaring. It's now nearly $1.5 trillion, and defaults are at a record. That has been fertile ground for companies that promise to help stretched borrowers by navigating the maze of federal programs that can reduce or forgive debts for those who qualify, such as public service workers or people on low incomes. But the Wall Street Journal says some services are outright scams, and others make promises that are illegal. Catch our report, Soaring Student Debt Opens Door to Relief Scams, at WSJ.com. As the G7 summit wraps up in France, the question is, where are we at this point on the trade battle with China? Stocks nosedived last Friday after the Chinese government launched retaliatory tariffs against the U.S., to which President Trump responded by threatening even stiffer tariffs on China. But at the G7 summit, Mr. Trump sought to ease tensions with China and the G7.
The vice chairman of China came out that he wants to see a deal made. He wants it to be made under calm conditions, using the word calm. I agree with him on that.
Let's get more from the Wall Street Journal's Josh Zumbrun, who joins us from Washington. Josh, the president said he got a call from China saying, in effect, let's make a deal. Does anyone know what in particular he was referring to?
No, and it seems like he overstated the state of play just a little bit. The Chinese and the U.S. teams have had kind of ongoing conversations between lower-level officials. They're, you know, still trying to iron out issues. They're still trying to figure out if China's actually coming to the U.S. in September. That was the original schedule after the latest rounds of meeting, which were in Shanghai, was that China would come back to the U.S. in September. We haven't kind of seen the details of that meeting yet, and so there has been some staff work about that. But whether or not China's calling up and saying, let's make a deal, it seems like that's probably a little strong. There's no real indication that China, for its part, has really changed its stance over the past couple of days. And, you know, as far as the two sides in this debate go, the U.S. stance, you know, will frequently kind of shift based off President Trump's statements. The Chinese side doesn't do that as much. They kind of tend to stake out a position and stick to it for a very long period of time and only move slowly and only move a little bit.
Yeah, this follows the events on Sunday, where, as the Wall Street Journal reported, President Trump whiplashed the G7 summit by saying he was having second thoughts about escalating the trade tensions with China, and then the White House sought to clarify that statement.
Right. The White House came out and said the only second thoughts he had is that he didn't raise the tariffs higher, is that he wished he'd raised the tariffs higher. So it's a little unclear. We've seen this pattern from the White House before, too, where they take an action that ends up being very negative for the financial markets, that prompts a lot of people to worry about the economy. And then a few days later, they take steps to soften that. So, you know, they clearly want to still show that they're being tough on China. But when it starts to affect the financial markets, they want to kind of ease the blow from that. And so this is part of that pattern we've seen many times, where they're trying to thread that needle, being hard on China, but not being hard on the financial markets. And as this weekend kind of shows, it's very hard to get that message across in a particularly coherent way.
Right. As we speak, stocks have recovered a portion of Friday's losses in Monday trading. It just seems like it's crucial to investors that the two greatest economic powers de-escalate their trade fight.
Yeah, and the other part of it that is going on here is that there was also some de-escalation with the European Union. I mean, this one doesn't get quite as much attention, but the trading relationship between the U.S. and the European Union is actually larger than that with China. The European Union is not a country. It's a collection of countries, of course. But when you add them all together, it's a much larger trading relationship than with China. And there's been a lot of tensions there as well. I mean, the U.S. has threatened car tariffs that would have a really big impact on Germany in particular. But to a lesser extent, the UK and Italy. The US has threatened big tariffs against France. So there's been a lot of tensions between the US and the EU. And so I think there's probably also some market relief that things seem to go well today, at least, between when the president was talking with Angela Merkel in Germany and with Emmanuel Macron in France. Those conversations appear to have gone pretty well. And so there's probably a little bit of relief from that as well. It's not 100% about China at this summit.
There were also tensions at the G7 summit. Apparently, U.S. officials did not like the format laid out, what issues were being discussed. I think discussions about niche topics.
Yeah, and those niche topics include climate change, which none of the, you know, the other members of the G7 don't consider climate change to be a niche topic. And so there was a meeting, apparently, at the summit where all the heads of state from the other six, you know, went to this meeting about climate change, which they view very seriously, and the Trump administration didn't attend, and President Trump didn't attend. And so that kind of underscores the difference on some of these issues. You know, a few other topics where they're having kind of a difficult time. One of the big ones is Russia. I mean, President Trump has said that he wants Vladimir Putin to come back into the G7. For a number of years, it was, you know, it was actually called the G8. And that was because Russia also participated in these summits. And Russia was thrown out back when they overtook the Crimean Peninsula. The other six countries in the G7, you know, don't want to let Russia back in for that. They say you can't just take over territory anymore. Trump wants to look past that and let Putin back in. You know, that's another issue where there's just not agreement between the U.S. and the other six members.
And also the other main topic of discussion was Iran. I guess Trump was blindsided, or said he was blindsided, by news that a top Iranian official showed up at the G7 summit.
Yeah, I mean, most of those countries had worked on that Iran nuclear deal a few years ago that the Trump administration then pulled out of. And so the other countries have still kind of wanted to salvage something there. The Trump administration has wanted to take a different approach towards Iran. We've heard different statements over the weekend about whether or not the U.S. knew this was going to happen. So, yeah, to be honest, I don't know the truth of it. But in the press conference with Emmanuel Macron at the end of the summit, Trump wasn't super negative about Iran. And they even raised the possibility that Trump and the Iranian head of state would meet at some point in the future, although it's not clear exactly when that might be.
Wall Street Journal reporter Josh Zumbrun joining us from Washington. Thanks, Josh.
Thanks so much for having me.
Next, the Wall Street Journal reports on how Nissan chief Carlos Ghosn built a parallel business as an investor in Silicon Valley with his son, using millions of dollars he received from an executive at a Nissan business partner in Oman. The Wall Street Journal's Nick Kostov wrote the story and spoke with Sam Westren.
So, Nick, this is a complicated story, but what do we know about the funds that Carlos Ghosn used for his investments in Silicon Valley startups?
So this story really begins in 2015, and that year the Ghosn set up an investment vehicle in Delaware called Shogun Investments. And this vehicle is to invest in startups in Silicon Valley. So the way this worked is that Carlos Ghosn's son, Anthony, who was working at the time for a Silicon Valley investor called Joe Lonsdale, he would find investments and find startups which he thought would do well. And he would either make the investments himself if they were small investments, or if they were larger investments, he would ask his dad for permission and for funds to invest the money into those startups. So, for example, he wanted to make an investment in Grab, and so he emailed his dad saying that Grab was an interesting investment, and his dad sent over $2 million, and Anthony obviously made that investment. So Anthony Goen was really the hunter. Goen really provided the funds, and obviously these funds, we now know, were coming from a Nissan client who is based in Oman and who deposits money in a feeder fund in Lebanon, and which then Mr. Goen directs to Shogun Investments.
Okay, so what do we know about this connection with the fund in Lebanon?
So the money which ended up at the Delaware fund and which was then invested into various startups, we know that it came from an executive at a Nissan distributorship called Devendu Kumar, who's an Indian national, and he transferred the money from his bank account in Switzerland to a Lebanon-based vehicle, and then the money was transferred over to Shogun Investments in the US. Now, what Japanese prosecutors allege and what Nissan investigators believe is that this money was actually siphoned off from incentive payments that Nissan were paying to their distributor in Oman. And so Japanese prosecutors specifically say that of two $5 million payments that Nissan made to the distributor in 2017 and 2018, $5 million of that they charge was diverted through the Indian national Devendu Kumar, Lebanon, and then over to Shogun Investments in the US.
Now, Carlos Ghosn has very strongly denied these allegations.
Yeah, absolutely. Carlos Ghosn denies the allegations completely and forcefully, and says he will fight them in court and, if given a fair trial, prevail. He says that this was a private investment, that he was providing private investment advice, and that there was absolutely no link between the money that Nissan was paying to his distributor and the money that Devendu Kumar was providing, and that ended up at Shogun Investments.
Yeah. Well, forgetting any notion of criminality, we still know that he had a personal business dealing with a client of Nissan. What can we learn from this story about the broader Ghosn saga?
Well, I think this story kind of paints a fuller picture of Carlos Ghosn's actions. I think a lot of time since November, people have been talking about this case in black and white. Is Carlos Ghosn guilty? Is he not guilty? If he's not guilty, then he should be allowed to go free. We don't know if there's anything criminal here, but at least it allows us to say more. We can at the very least say that he kind of started a kind of parallel business with a Nissan client where he helps to invest 40 million euros of funds coming from this person. And whether it's criminal or not, I think it, by international business standards, many people would say that shows somewhat questionable judgment, and also the fact that he didn't tell the company maybe creates some sort of conflict of interest. So I think it allows us to paint a fuller picture of his actions in the years that the Japanese prosecutors are looking at.
The Wall Street Journal's Nick Kostoff. And that's what's news for Monday afternoon. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.